Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Trevor from Halifax calling in to say that I support Creative Control on Patreon because I think long-form arts journalism is a crucial part of music culture, and there's simply not enough of it out there today. Vish is a master interviewer, he lands great guests, and he has his finger on the pulse of the ever-changing music landscape both here in Canada and abroad. For all of these reasons and many more, I think you should support Creative Control on Patreon too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Visha's wife, and I will love him no matter what you do. And now he has me on the record saying that.
Tracy Ann Campbell is a wondrous and beloved songwriter, singer, and musician based in her hometown of Glasgow, Scotland. In 1996, she co-founded the acclaimed pop band Camera Obscura, and beyond work and projects like Tracy Ann and Danny, she has led Camera Obscura for close to 30 years. The band's new album is also their first since 2013's Desire Lines, an absence precipitated by the 2015 death of longtime bandmate Carrie Lander, who was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer. After regrouping for a live performance in the fall of 2018, Camera Obscura convened for writing and recording sessions in the ensuing years, resulting in their brilliant and haunting sixth album. It's called Look to the East, Look to the West. It's out on May 3rd, 2024, via Merge Records. And it prompted Tracy Ann and I to have a discussion about things like motherhood, sibling rivalries, and grieving, duality, and figuring yourself out, some of the wonderfully clever and heartfelt new Camera Obscura songs, reverb and country music, bonding among women and among family members, what's next for Camera Obscura, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this listener-supported and donor-driven podcast. Spread the word about it. Leave nice reviews and ratings on your podcast platform if you have a moment to do so. And make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters like me to make a living. All amounts are welcome. So please, if you are able to, Visit patreon.com/creativecontrol and subscribe to this show today. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a bricks and mortar record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, but they also have a great website, blackbird.ca, where you can order records. Say you want the new Camera Obscura album, look to the east, look to the west, and you want it shipped right to your house. Well, go to blackbird.ca and type that in the search box, and if they can get it for you, they'll get it for you. It's just that simple. Plus, in-kind support from independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 861 of Creative Control, featuring the wonderfully talented Tracy Ann Campbell from Camera Obscura, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Tracy Ann. How's it going?
Hi there. Hi, Vish. I'm good.
It's nice to meet you this way. Where in the world are you?
I am in Glasgow. It's a beautiful spring day. Oh. It's cold, but I'm here in Glasgow.
Oh, nice. So you are from there, I believe. Have you ever lived anywhere else?
No. I've been lots of places, but I've never lived anywhere else.
Oh.
Quite boring, isn't it?
No, not really. I'm from Canada. I moved relatively recently across the country. My wife's family is from Alberta, so we moved from Ontario to Alberta, and it's a bit of a shift, quite a change, but my kids are happy. Everyone's happy. Have you ever contemplated living anywhere else? Did you ever come close?
Not close enough. I think maybe there was a vague fantasy about living in Sweden at one point, but that's what it was exactly, a vague fantasy.
I see.
I think I'm pretty settled here. I've got a 10-year-old and he's in school, so that's the way it's going. We're here.
Yeah. I got a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old. So
So
they're keeping us busy too. I couldn't tell. My wife thought, because we've been really enjoying this wonderful album, Look to the East, Look to the West. Before I go much further, congratulations on this wonderful new album.
Thanks very much. I'm really pleased that you like it.
Yeah, no, we love it. We've been playing it nonstop. Kids love it.
Wow.
Everyone's into it.
Great. The kids love it.
Happens sometimes in the house. People who know the show know I go on and on, but we do spend some time listening to music by new music. By all my guests, sometimes to my family's chagrin, sometimes to their great joy. They're like, Papa, you got to stop playing this record. Have you interviewed this person yet, Papa? We're done. And I say, it's coming up. Just give me a break. Cause I do it when I'm, making breakfast or dinner or doing chores. I just have some music playing. And now I'm trying to do the AirPods or the earbuds or whatever, but I like sharing the music. Anyway, your situation, if you care, everyone loves a record in the house. And my wife...
I do care.
My wife wondered if it was... that there's a fair amount of parenting in the record in terms of inspiring the lyrics. I'm hearing some real grief. I'm hearing all sorts of things, to be honest with you. I'm hearing humor. Let's get to the parenting first. Do you feel like there's a lot of that in here as you write?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think, when I made the last record with the band, Desire Lines, I actually got pregnant around about that time, And so after Desire Lines, I sort of automatically became a parent and feel like for the last 10 years, that's what I've mainly been doing.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's kind of a natural thing to happen, maybe especially for a female in the music business, maybe, to sort of concentrate on that mainly. Now, there was obviously other circumstances for us, reasons why we didn't sort of continue the way we had been continuing. Desire Lines kind of was recorded, and then Kerry got sick, and so all things kind of stopped. But I think kind of, I suppose, being a parent saved me in a way.
Yeah.
But also threw up a lot, you know, about, oh, who am I now?
Yeah.
Am I just the mum to the kid? Which, you know, I'm grateful for. It's the best job, you know. He being born helped me.
Yeah.
Along the way, you know.
Yeah, my condolences to you and your bandmates on the loss of Kerry Lander there. I'm so sorry to hear that, or to know that, I should say. And there is this narrative or presumption that the band's extended hiatus was precipitated by that loss. I think what you're saying is that was a contributing factor for sure, but other life circumstances played a part in it. Yeah, you became a mom.
I did, and other people in the band, Kenny has got two boys and Gavin's got two boys, so they became parents as well. So we were all pretty busy with that.
Yeah.
And the two things are quite difficult to manage.
I was going
to
ask about that. It doesn't come up. So I've talked to a lot of musicians who are parents, but we don't actually get into the logistics of trying to be an active touring musician. And raising a family. You've had, like I say, you've had a unique experience in that I think your band would have taken a break to grieve and recover no matter what. But now that you're sort of back at it, I suppose, sorry, is that the right term? Do you feel publicly it feels like you were gone and not working in this time frame? Were you writing? Were you contemplating coming back? Did you think the band was done? These kinds of questions? What was going on in this time?
I think when Kerry died, we were all just in a sort of daze, really, of grief. And we never had big discussions about, you know, so is that it? Are we going to quit or shall we continue? There just wasn't really an appetite for it, to be honest. But as ever in my life, songwriting helps me deal with big things, you know.
Yeah.
So I did probably write on my own in one way or another, whether it was writing lyrics or sometimes coming up with melodies. And I did write songs, and including Sugar Almond was probably written, you know, in the first year or so of that happening. I guess when you think about the fact that it's been 10 years since we've made a record, it does seem like we've just dropped off the face of the earth. But I suppose behind the scenes, it hasn't felt exactly like that, you know. I went and made a record with Danny Coughlin and tried to, I don't want to say fill the void because that sounds disrespectful to Dan. Dan came along and there was an opportunity to make music with somebody that I really liked, I really loved, I really got on with, and he helped grow my confidence again. Because I guess I did think, oh, well, that's it, really. You know, I was grieving. We never had the conversation, but I was grieving for my friend, but I also think there was a lot of grief for the band. I think I felt I was grieving the band and grieving my identity in the world. And, you know, sure, I was at home and having a nice time with my child and being a mom and trying my best, but I was sort of panicking a little bit about, well, what else am I, who else am I, what else am I going to do? And I suppose in a subtle way I was kind of beaving away. It just doesn't look like it until now. Yeah.
Well, I mean, for what it's worth, it's great to have you back, if I may use that term. Again, you were working with, is that the only musical project you embarked upon in this time, the work with Danny?
I mean, pretty much, it's the only records I released. I did a couple of vocals for a few bands, you know, but I didn't release my own music. I thought about doing all sorts of stuff, but yeah, I'm pretty slow when it comes to these things. I take my time, and I'm not great at doing a million things at once, especially these days with my menopausal head.
Right. Yeah, I can appreciate that to some degree. I can't totally appreciate it, but I understand what you're saying. Yeah. So the work with Danny, was that part of a grieving process? Did you write about grief in that project as well?
I did write one song about Kerry, but I did have, as I say, I had already written most of Sugar Almond by then, but it didn't feel like it was a song that I felt I could share with the world. And I certainly didn't feel like I could share it, and I don't know if burden's the right word, but burden the world with it and burden Dan with it. I did write another song, Alabama, which was kind of about Kerry, but about missing the band as well. It was just about dealing with my new situation where I don't go to work with Camera Obscura, you know.
Yeah.
So I did write that with Dan.
As you pondered what you might do outside of music, yeah. It sounds like it was out, let alone Camera Obscura, it might have been outside of music. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, except when I ask myself that question, I just think, oh, I can't do anything else. I've been doing this for so long. You know, I was talking recently to somebody about how sometimes when you get frustrated with being a musician for whatever reason, you know, logistically it's a nightmare, you know, financially it's a wee bit of a nightmare.
Yeah.
Of course, there's lots of positives, and I don't want to sound like a big Debbie Downer, but sometimes I'll occasionally go, ah, why did I'll think back to when I was like 19 or whatever, when I went for an interview for the Bank of Scotland. And I told the manager, the bank manager, I don't really want to work in a bank. I'd really like to be in a band. And of course they were like, okay, maybe this job's not for you.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I sort of think about stuff like that, and I think, who else would I have been? You know?
Yeah.
I didn't really think about retraining. I'm just not very good at having that kind of ambition. I'm sort of, I get comfortable in a thing and I just sort of hang on to it for dear life. And that's what's happening here.
Yeah. Well, again, I can't emphasize enough. We're all happy that you have not given it up.
Because, I'm like a dog with a bone.
Well, they're wonderful songs is what I'm getting at. And there are the you mentioned the song that is explicitly, I suppose, about Kerry, Sugar Almond. But as I said, my wife picked up on some parenting stuff. I want to ask you about that. I wonder if you can talk about maybe other people, other loss on this record, like the song Liberty Print, for example.
Yeah.
I'm like, who are you singing? What could you talk a little bit about?
Sure.
What inspired that one?
My brother Gavin died very unexpectedly, and in 2019.
Oh, I'm so.
I'd actually just arrived in Seattle with Danny to start a U.S. tour. A North American tour, sorry.
Yeah.
And I got a message to say that my brother had died the day before.
I'm so sorry. That's awful.
And awful. Him and I, without getting into it too much, we had quite a sort of not an easy relationship. We share a father, and we weren't brought up together.
Oh, I see.
And he kind of flitted in and out of my life, and without you know, going too much into it again, he had trouble. He had some trouble with, you know, alcohol and drugs, and he was a bit of a troubled boy. He was a promising footballer, so he was signed to an English football team when he was quite young, and that's where he was supposed to do. Sort of funny thing is the cliche, I don't know if you've heard about this, but the sort of cliche in Glasgow is that if you come from a working class family, you either become a footballer or a musician. And he was nearly a footballer and I was a musician. So anyway, he died, and it was tragic, absolutely tragic. And it just inspired that song. It made me think about him and about his hopes and desires and his dreams. And he could have been brilliant, you know. He was very willful and had ambition, and he worked hard and he liked to take care of himself. And then when he was not doing great. He was a nightmare.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to have a relationship with somebody like that. So I guess that song was, there was a lot of reflection on my part, you know. Well, maybe I could have been better for him, or if things had been like this, maybe this would have happened, you know. So I suppose, yeah, I sort of tried to get a little bit closer to him by writing a song about him.
It sounds like your brother had something of a dual personality from your perspective.
Yeah.
It sounds like that has caused, his loss has caused you to have a duality about your relationship with him, like maybe
definitely.
I should have been kinder. And then I think about the arrangement of this song and a few songs on this record where they start one way and then the arrangement kind of changes, or you're singing kind of on your own sparsely and then an arrangement comes on at the end of a record. I hear these kinds of mood and tonal shifts. Do you feel like what you're getting at lyrically with this song may have inspired that arrangement shift? And for those who don't know what I mean, Liberty Prince starts out fairly even-tempered. And then it kicks in. It kicks into this frenetic thing. And then there's this mix of, you're talking about your brother's mother, and you're a you're a mother. And I just wonder if there's just a lot of stuff. It just seems like a very emotional turmoil thing happening in that song.
There's a lot in it, you know. It was, and the song is also about a night when the band played a show. It was our first time we played the Glasgow Barrowlands, and it was a big deal. We'd sold out the Barrowlands, and everybody was so pleased with themselves, and family wanted to come. And that was always a tricky thing for me, you know, can I allow this person to come or whatever? And he did come to that show, and he literally ended up getting thrown out of the venue. And, you know, it was a drama, and it ruined the night, and I think
probably on purpose.
No, not on purpose. I just think maybe I think at the time he was having some trouble, and I also think that maybe it was difficult for him to come there and see me.
That's what I'm, you know. Sorry. Did you?
Yeah.
And I don't mean to delve too far into it. This is not a therapy session.
No,
I'm sorry, but did you have I don't know if you feel this way. Did you feel yourself about him? Was there a competition for affection between you and your brother for your parents?
No.
Nothing like that.
Not at all.
Okay.
No, nothing like that at all. No. I just know that he wanted to be closer to me, and through circumstance and just the way things were, I know that I held him at arm's length a little bit.
And but as a parent now, you probably have come upon the fact that when a child is acting out, they're trying to get your attention, good or bad.
Of course,
just want you to pay attention to them. And I think adults who get in these situations, again, I am not a psychologist. I don't know anything about this situation. It is very similar.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, in retrospect, you've got a big event happening. A lot of attention is being by strangers. I don't know the hall size, but thousands of people, hundreds of people are watching?
Yeah, like 1,300.
That's amazing. First of all, congratulations on playing such a nice big room. That's great. Secondly, though, imagine you're a self-conscious sibling and you see your sibling getting all this attention. What are you going to do? So
it was a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that I didn't realize it was a lot until he died, and then I really started thinking about everything. And of course, you can always rationalize stuff after the fact, can't you? Can always, you know, always think to yourself, I should have done this, or maybe I could have done that, or, you know, how could it have been? But I do know in myself that we dealt with it the way we dealt with it, and it just was the way it had to be.
The song that I'm talking about, Liberty Print, ends this way. Oh, what a terrible waste of a young man's time. You never did find peace. Oh, it's no fun. I had to visit your mother. You were her only son. I went to visit your mother. You were her only son. You have objectivity talking. I'm sorry. Did you share a mother?
No, we shared a father.
Right. Okay. So you have this objectivity of having to go see your brother's grieving mother. I don't know. There's a lot going on in that song. And I noticed one of our favorite songs in the house is We're Going to Make It in a Man's World. And I noticed that you will say occasionally, we're going to make it in a man's world. I'm going to make it in a man's world. So Sorry, I just feel like there's a lot of duality here. Do you feel like Tracy Ann, the songwriter and musician, Tracy Ann, the mother? Who am I? Like, are you are you having this kind of not a crisis, but are you having this?
Do you know? I think you've sort of hit the nail on the head a wee bit, because I do think I was having a wee bit of a crisis about you know, and I might still be having that crisis.
Well, I wondered. I wondered what the title alluded to. The title even suggests it's the title is. Is that a reference to something? Look to the east, look to the west?
No, it was just more... I actually don't know where that came from. I feel like I've stolen it from somewhere, but I'm not sure. It was a bit of that sort of confusion about what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, who am I? Where am I going? But it was also about being open-minded.
But it's two things again. It's two directions. There's this duality thing that I keep coming upon when I think of this circuit.
You're saying this.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Were you going to expand upon it with this duality?
No. You're making me think about, because sometimes, you know, you just write the songs and you don't always sit down with yourself thinking, right. I mean, of course, there's things in songs that I know what they're specifically about, but sometimes there's more of a knowing or a sense or a feeling and a like that when somebody else listens to it, they can almost in a way tell me what it is I've been doing or what it is I've been writing about. You're kind of right, you know. There's a lot of conflict there. Maybe I've got a split personality.
I don't know that you do. I don't know you at all. We just met, but I don't know this for a fact. But there seems to be, have you, in writing these songs and pondering them, are you any closer to figuring yourself out or who you are or no?
Well, I think the thing is, I can be both things, can't I? I can be mum and I can be a musician. But I think a lot of the time when you're not doing it full time, or when I've not been doing it full time for the last 10 years and I've sort of been frustrated because I've wanted to do it and there's all sorts of reasons why I haven't been able to do it. You're a bit like a kid that's got their toy taken off them and you want that toy back and you don't quite know how to get it and you're sort of in a bad mood till you get it.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm not saying I've been in a bad mood, I've been busy, but I think there's been times where I don't mind admitting I've sort of stood in the kitchen or I'm hanging a washing up or something and I just thought, what is this? What happened to me playing a show or writing a song or going on tour?
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind admitting I struggled with it. I struggled with just being at home, being a mum and taking care of all of that. Found it really difficult. And I don't know if that's something to do with, like, becoming a mother later in life. I was 39.
Yeah.
And, by the way, I don't want to sound like that I don't love that job and I'm not grateful. He's the best thing that's ever happened to me, truly. And I wouldn't change anything. But I think it's still all right for me as a woman in this day and age to sort of want more.
No, 100%. If you've been the same person for 39 years and then you have a child, I mean, you are a different person. I mean, in some physiologically, you're different. Psychologically, you're different. You have a right to change. We all have the right to change. But I think becoming a parent does change you in a pretty profound way. By the way, when I mention duality, I'm actually suggesting a kind of symbiotic duality, but sometimes that duality can represent oppositional forces. And I think you're maybe navigating that. I'm not being a parent and a caregiver shouldn't be the opposite of being a provider and a person who makes music and goes and tours. Like, have you reconciled that? Like, I just think of this song, we're gonna make it in a man's world these days, you know. That's an interesting sentiment as we talk about gender fluidity and whatnot, but that's oppositional too, you know, the notion if you're gonna go with the conventional gender forms. So I didn't mean to lose my train of thought there, but
it's all right.
You know what I'm getting at there? Like, it's not necessarily symbiotic. Sometimes it can be oppositional, but sometimes they work together, don't they?
They do. I think sometimes I tend to have a bit of a conflict in my head in general about things. You know, I'm quite torn often. What's the right thing to do? I'm always trying to do the right thing, but sometimes you end up trying to do the right thing for everybody and you don't listen to yourself. And I think I'm actually learning to listen to myself. You know, I'm nearly 50. I'm still learning to be a better person and be open and, you know, have confidence in myself.
Yeah. Historically, how much collaborating with one other songwriter have you done, would you say? Because you've worked in a band framework, but how often have you written, co-written songs with like one other person?
Well, I did it with Dan. And I, at the start of the band, when we first started, I didn't know how to write songs and I just wanted to be in a band and learn how to write songs. And I wrote some with John Henderson, who I started the band with. John Henderson, the song Denon is about him, actually. Suppose I've been doing a lot of reflecting, you know.
You take a break from what you've been doing and your life changes and you are in middle age, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I'm well in there now.
Yeah, so you gotta be, everyone's doing it. It's the hottest rage. The rage is to reflect.
That's the thing to do.
Yeah, reflect upon your life at the midpoint. So you feel like I wonder about that too. We've talked about grieving and I guess parenting is a sort of renewal, but you're reflective for sure. Is that fair?
Yeah, I am reflective. And, you know, there's big people have been in my life and I suppose there's a lot of big people for me on this record, or big things that people that are important to me.
Yeah.
But getting back to the songwriting, there's one co-write on the record with Donna, and her and I have done quite a lot of songwriting over the past few years together. Just none of them are on this particular record, but we started that in when we met and when she joined the band. I'm not good at timelines, but I think she joined the band around 2019.
Yeah.
And we started, you know, rehearsing, and I did a thing with her where I did some mentoring for her songwriting. Not that she really needed it, but anyway, we did this mentoring thing. She asked me to be her mentor, and it sort of got my songwriting thing back on, because I was writing the odd song, but not that many. So she was like sending me these songs, and I was going, oh God, that's really great. Oh, I'll try and write a song and send it back. You know, so we did a little bit of songwriting tennis. And so in answer to your question, I've written quite a lot of songs with her.
Right.
So we'll see where that goes.
When someone asks you to be a mentor, can you talk about the feeling that instills within you?
Dread.
On the one hand, I could see it feeling like a bit of stress, pressure, and dread. On the other, did it fill you consciously or subconsciously with confidence that someone thought of you as someone who could help them?
It did in time, because at first, I thought, don't be ridiculous. I don't know anything about songwriting. You know, yeah, I know how to write my own songs, but I don't know how to do any of this. You know, I've got that sort of imposter syndrome thing, which is, I'm really trying to let go of that because it sounds terribly negative. And anyway, at first I just sort of thought, oh God, I don't know if I can do this. But I think just being honest about what you think you can bring to the table sometimes helps, even if you say, well, I'm not sure I'm going to be so great at this, but we can try it. But yes, it did build me with confidence, because I realised actually she got something out of it.
Yeah.
And then we got songs out of it.
Right. You've been writing songs for what, 25, how long, roughly?
I probably wrote my first song when I was about 96 or 7,
right.
97.
Yeah. Closing 96. In on 30 years of songwriting.
Yeah.
And what does it mean to you that someone with that pedigree still has imposter syndrome? What does that mean exactly?
I think it's common.
You've worked with labels, you know, other people want to work with you and get behind it. What kind of external, and you have a fan base. 1,300 people, everyone. Remember back in the conversation? That's how many people are gathered in one, at least one hall, and that happens around the world. What kind of external validation do you suppose you need?
I just need to, remind myself. But I've always been a bit like that, you know. Yeah. I go through waves of where I feel, no, I can do this. And I have had periods like that.
Yeah.
I just need to get back into it again.
Yeah.
You know, I know what my strengths are.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good. And they're evident on this record. Hey, thanks for listening to Creative Control, as always. As you may have heard me mention, I recently lost my day job, and I've had a few conversations with people since who've said, you had a day job? I thought your podcast was your day job. When I explained why it hasn't been my day job to a friend, he suggested I should share some of this information with people like you listening right now. So, in short, unless they have some giant exclusive million-dollar contract, podcasters are not paid to make stuff by companies like Apple and Spotify. Podcasters do not make any money from streaming royalties. Ad revenue is dependent on a certain threshold of downloads each month, and even if your show is accessed 30,000 times a month, the income you get is actually really minimal. So podcasters like me usually make time in our lives to support our communities and our interests to make these shows, and our most reliable source of income for this work is, in fact, crowdfunding. In my case, it's my Patreon. So if you'd like to receive ad-free episodes earlier than everyone else, regular newsletters and blog posts, bonus audio content, and support my work, quite literally, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I want to go to this. You'd mentioned that you've been working with Donna, but none of the songs really are on this album except for one. We're going to make it in a man's world. Can we talk a little bit about what inspired this very, very catchy song and exactly how you worked together on it, where the germ of the idea came from, how it was fleshed out? I'm also just curious if you had a discussion about the intention or sentiment behind the song, because it's interesting to me.
I was asked to meet up with an artist, Margaret Salmon. She's an American filmmaker.
Yeah.
She teaches at the Glasgow School of Art in Glasgow, of course. And she teaches feminism and filmmaking. And she was making this film about... And of course, when I was asked to meet her, I sort of thought, oh, I don't do that. I can't do that, you know. Well, I don't what talk to an academic about, you know. So it was terrifying. And Donna and I had been writing songs, and this song, I think actually, I feel like Donna would need to clarify how this song came about, but I think what happened is she had been writing some songs and I'd been sending her some songs in retaliation, and I'd accidentally stolen a bit of her melody from one of her songs and sort of batted it back to her. I think that's how it came about, and I think she sort of said, yeah, that bit sounds like this, my song, and it just sort of came from there. And I wrote the lyrics and they weren't quite finished, and anyway, I was asked to do this music to Margaret's film about women and economics, and my understanding of film was about how women spend their time and how they earn their money, what are the jobs that they're doing every day where they don't get paid.
Yeah.
You know, and she took a sort of section of society in a working class area of Glasgow, one where my family is from, so that made it more interesting to me as well, about how the society had changed, what kind of people were living there and what women were there and what were they doing. So yeah, I sort of said to Donna, oh, do you think we could do this together? You know, two women in a group. It's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Shall we, you know, how do you earn your money? How do I earn my money? And sometimes it's not clear.
Yeah.
We work every day and we go to a studio 3 times a week and we work hard, but how are we earning our money through doing this, you know? It's just quite fascinating. So yeah, that's how it came about. And then, so we just did a little version for Margaret, and Donna did all the keyboards and, you know, all the instruments, and I sort of sung the song and had the lyrics, and the song just had legs, and Margaret really liked it, and we just decided to pitch it to the group and we padded it out.
It also has this weird quality where the song, like a bridge shows up out of nowhere. And
it's got a weird structure.
It's super weird structure. Yes. I was curious how you're going to pull it off live, because I can hear it as almost like a studio creation or something, or like, you know, yeah, it's weird. For me, it vaguely reminded, well, obviously the touchstone for me as someone who is a James Brown fan of his music, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, he's got the song, It's a Man's, 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 Man's World.
Yeah.
But then it also has like almost like a Good Vibrations vibe, or like a Beach Boys vibe, where it stops and then gets going again or something. So it has this classic pop and soul, I guess, sensibility. Mm-hmm. So I just wondered if these were touchstones. Like, when I hear A Man's World, I'm sorry, I'm a younger person, but I think of that James Brown song from so long ago.
Mm-hmm,
But I guess it's a common enough expression that you were kind of playing up.
Yeah, and there was part of it was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but also with a message that, you know, if you're the underdog, if you're not expected to get on and make it, maybe you just can, maybe you just will, you know?
Yeah, no.
It was kind of that sort of vibe, but with a serious message, you know?
Yeah, yeah. When I asked earlier about the alternating between we're going to make it and I'm going to make it, can you talk about that decision?
I suppose a lot of that's to do with, well, I'm going to make it whether you come with me or you don't want to come with me. And the weir is, shall we go and do it? You know, there's a lot of stuff in the songs that's also about the conflict between my ability to go to work, you know, to be in this band, to take my songs that I've written for 30 years and go forward with them because of the band's logistical situation.
Yeah.
You know, people would imagine all sorts of things about, you know, people in bands having loads of money and just being able to go on the road. And there's 100 reasons why it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of left wondering, are my hands tied or do I have the freedom to do what I want?
Yeah.
So a part of it was, I was kind of saying that as well. I'm in a band. I'm not a solo artist. Are we going to do this or am I going to have to go and do it myself? And it's the conflict of that as well, because there's a lot of loyalty. You know, it was a big deal for me to go make a record with Dan without the group. It was a big deal for me to write songs with Donna. You know, there's a lot of sort of gang mentality in a good way, where we're a team. We've been a team for a long time. But I think that in the past 10 years, I've had a lot of questions for myself. Do you have the right to go on and do music without your band members? Do you have the ability? Are you confident enough? Is it okay? Will anybody be upset? You know, lots of conflict about that.
Conflict with yourself, or was this something you had to...
With myself.
Okay.
Not with myself.
Yeah.
Nobody else, just with myself, giving myself permission.
Did you end up having a band discussion when you reconvened to be like, look, this is our band. I want this to continue. I know we took a break, but we have to do this. Like, did you have that kind of talk?
I think that we didn't really talk about not doing it or doing it, but then we got asked to play that gig with the Boaty Weekender with Belle and Sebastian. And
oh, yeah.
Everybody, it'd been so long, and we were all so, you know, sensitive, maybe a little bit too sensitive with each other about whether somebody should stick their hand up and say, I really want to play this gig. Because we didn't want to look like we didn't care about what had happened, or it was sensitive. And people were also frightened to ask us.
Yeah.
Because death and something like that happening to us and to Kane and our family, it's really hard for people to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, people just want to shy away from it. And I understand why. It's difficult.
Yeah.
But when we got asked to play that gig, everybody was really up for it. And that inspired also lots of songs in me. And then before I knew I had enough songs to get going. And, you know, and I just sort of suggested, look, should we make a record, you know?
Yeah.
And we managed it. And we had, there was a lot against us, you know,
yeah.
making that record. It was quite hard one. Because the COVID and, you know, just logistically people having other jobs and children and being out of the game a little bit.
Right. Being out of the game is an interesting point. My wife and I were having a chat about how remarkable the musicianship on this record. We're both guitar people. We like guitars.
Okay.
Some great guitar playing on this record.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad that you're saying that. I think so too.
Yeah. Like it some of it reminds me of, like some of my favorite and top tier guitar players, like Nels Klein or something. It's just like really interesting guitar playing. My point was going to be though, you know, you reconvene after some time apart. Did anything about the band and their skill set, surprise you? Because there is some chatter in the narrative about this record about how there's no reverb, employed.
Yeah.
And there's, so that suggests a certain clarity and confidence, to be honest. You're not shrouding the band in this tone. And yet I also, you know, ironically, I associate reverb a little bit with country music. And there's a lot of country sounds here. I don't know if we can talk about that. But first of all, back to my original question. Have you been surprised by what people brought to the table, your bandmates, in this this regard?
I don't know if surprise is the right word, but I've been delighted by it. I think that top of my agenda was to write better songs than I'd written before. So I was really trying hard to, you know, get out of my sort of usual go-to chord structures and all the rest of it. And I was really trying hard. I really had this ambition to try and step my game up. And I think that other people had the same feeling, you know. I think that naturally everybody should get better at what they do. And I think that our musicianship is definitely better than it was 15 years ago, absolutely, without a doubt.
Yeah.
So I'm just delighted, I think. And then Donna arriving and bringing her skill set. I think we were just really up for trying to make a very musical record. And our producer, Yari, who had produced Let's Get Out of This Country, my modelling career, I wanted him to come on this sort of journey of making this record. I wanted him because I felt like he knew us, he knew Carey, he loved Carey, he had the sensitivity to, you know, take us with a new member, but also to push us and not, you know, piss about and be too gentle with us. He's quite a firm guy and he doesn't mind saying how it is.
Yeah.
And he gets the best out of people in that way. I've seen him do it before and he did it again.
Yeah.
This time, you know, he had people in the studio till 3 a.m. where they were absolutely, they didn't have anything left, and he'd be saying, you know, no, you've got to do it again. You're not leaving a studio till you're going to do it again. I'm going to do it again.
Hmm.
He's, you know, he's kind of like that. And he sort of said, if we're going to make this record, it's got to be better than any other record you've ever made, or I'm not doing it. You know, so.
Do you feel like you accomplished that?
I do. I know that that's a massive cliche and everybody under the sun that makes records says, oh, it's the best record we've ever made.
Yeah
I do. I think we had a lot of, we overcame a lot, and we had a great fun making it. And I'm really proud of the record. I think it's a great record.
Yeah.
If that doesn't make me sound too conceited.
No, you don't sound conceited at all. You sound like you must. I mean, the context is the context. It's probably a celebratory thing to bring the band back together, and something you maybe thought
with it.
You may not have, like, you know, you should be. And then there's probably this sense of like, I didn't know if we were ever going to do this again.
No, and it was a struggle to get to that point, and it was a struggle whilst making it.
Yeah.
Because it was during lockdown and we had flights cancelled, and, you know, financially it was a nightmare because there was a lot of money spent and back and forth and cancelled flights and trips here and bringing a producer over from Greece every month and lots of stuff like that. But it was all worth it.
Yeah.
You know, we made the kind of record that we wanted to make. We made it where we wanted to make it. We made it with the producer that we wanted to make it with. And and it's out there in the world and we've done it. And it's kind of miraculous to me.
Yeah.
In a way.
I alluded to the reverb or lack thereof. And you mentioned, Yari, was that a conversation? Was that a conscious decision? Are we making too big a deal of this, that there's less reverb?
I think that there's some reverb because they have echo chambers at Rockfield. They've got 3 echo chambers. So we did use it, but we didn't have the crazy reverb that we had in the past. I would need to ask Yari, but I think maybe in the past, you know, a lot of that reverb was because we loved music that was sounded like that. We loved that whole Spectre thing. We were very much into the wall sound, but also we were probably a bit messier, you know, our musicianship was probably a bit messier. You can hide a lot with reverb, and all the songs are recorded live this time as they were the last time. So you get a few shots to get it, and you know, it will be what it will be, sort of thing. But I think we felt that we didn't want to make the exact same record as we'd done in the past with him, and we did want to be a bit more braver and willing to let people really look in and hear what's actually there. You know, we still recorded live and we did some overdubs, but I think it's a much cleaner record, and it's exposed in a good way.
You don't do the vocals live, do you? The vocals we're hearing were done.
I do.
Are they?
I do.
Really?
Do the vocals live, but there are some overdubs. I mean, the last 2 records we made with him, all the vocals were live. Huh. This time, yeah, he always wants a take that where everybody's sounding good. But I think this time there are some overdubs, but some of the vocals are live, you know?
Yeah.
Like we did, like Sleepwalking and Sugar Almond. Donna and I went in late at night and did that ourselves, and, you know, but yeah, for the most part, that's how we like to record.
Sleepwalking, more duality, if I might say. 2 things at once. Yeah. Some going on there that I haven't quite unpacked, but I feel it.
Okay.
And there's something. I'll keep thinking about it, and I'll hand in my English essay to you, and you can give me a mark. And
I'd love to know.
To tell me how I did. When someone, a vocalist in particular, makes a conscious decision to, let's get rid of the distortion, let's get rid of the reverb, let's pull the faders up, I want my vocals more prominent. That can be an aesthetic choice. I think also the vocals the vocalist is trying often to communicate the clearest in the language that we all understand. Do you think in making this decision to limit or eliminate the reverb, you were hoping to be as clear as possible as a singer so that people got it and they weren't?
I do like records where the vocalist is in the ear of the listener. And I guess I wanted that. I wanted to whisper in the ear of the listener. I mean, the ironic thing is that both times we went to record, I had a cold. I had COVID one of the times.
Oh, no.
So I never felt at the time that I was doing a great job vocally. I felt like my voice was scratchy and I had a cold and I felt a bit sort of worried about it. But we just went with it. You know, we just did it because we were there, and that was that. I'm not making excuses. It just is fact.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was important for these songs to be really, you know, I wanted them to be in the face of the listener in a way.
Yeah.
In a nice way.
Yeah. I've talked about this a few times recently with guests when it seemed germane. As a parent, I'm, you know, I said earlier, my kids are just 12 and 9, but I'm getting this, I'm seeing them develop independence, and I'm starting to get a little emotional about the notion of them leaving the house.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, I mean, I got some years left, but I know that these things go quickly. And I was pondering your song, Only a Dream. And I wondered if that was inspired, you know, again, there's grief swimming around here. I think there's parenting swimming around here.
Yeah.
Is that a conflation of the two?
There's definitely something in there about that. You know, you feel, I've written a couple other songs about my kid. I wrote a song called Baby B, but hasn't seen the light of day yet, really.
Yeah.
It was really about that feeling when you feel them kind of getting further away from you, you know? and you know that you've got to let that happen. You can't pull them back if they don't want to come to you.
Yeah.
You've got to let them. And I know that I'll have, or I've always felt that I'd have more trouble with that. Yeah, but letting them be themselves, because my kid has got a personality and a half, and I love his personality, and I love thinking about how different he is to me when I was that age. He's much more confident, he's much more savvy, he's smarter, he's funnier, he's more talented. He's just, I guess it's different times as well, but just that sort of reminder that he will leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to keep him as close as possible. There's different ways to do it, isn't there? And there's, you can keep them close by giving them freedom.
Yeah, we've been very tight-knit since we moved from Ontario to Alberta basically January 2020.
Okay.
And then, you know, a few months later, the whole world changed forever. And as a result, I don't know if what it would have been like if it weren't for the pandemic, but we're pretty tight knit. So I'm just feeling a bit more emotional. And then for some reason, I'm being sent albums by parents who are clearly kind of going through the same thing of like, sorry, did you find during this, say the last 4 years, have you developed some closer bonds to your family, your child, in fact?
I think I've always felt really close to him.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm very close to him and he's very close to his dad. And I think we've got something good going on, you know.
Yeah.
During lockdown, I mean, he went from what, 6 to 8 or something like that. And at first we found it quite difficult because, of course, he couldn't understand why he wasn't allowed to play in the swings in the park or go to school. And we had probably for the first time, some behaviour that we found difficult. You know, because we hadn't really been challenged like that before.
Yeah.
But I think I like to be as honest with my child as I can and talk to him like, not like an adult, but kids are smart. You know, you can't pull the wool.
No, absolutely. But I think you have to. I wasn't sure where sleepwalking was coming from either, by the way. I don't know if that's a parent talking to a child or something else. But the first lines are, they told you it was coke, it was ketamine.
Yeah.
Chasing every heart and hit, foe or friend. It wasn't really you, so it wasn't really me. Was it the chase, the falling? Probably not what I'm thinking, or probably not in line with what we're discussing.
It's not about a child. It's about somebody that I knew. Yeah. And it was about somebody that I knew a long time ago. And it was one particular night. It was a sort of troubled night. And I met this person again fairly in the past few years, and we kind of got back in touch and we had a good chat and resolved a few things, and it reminded me about that night. And you know, and it was just a song about sort of coming full circle with somebody, you know, realizing, oh, I can see the bigger picture now that I'm away from that.
Yeah, we're getting into, you know, as a 12-year-old, my wife's starting to get the little, like, we got to start talking to this kid about what the, you know, drugs and threats and
all of it.
Yeah. And we hope,
and it's,
you know,
scary.
It is. And particularly, you know, we're starting to know people who are supposedly doing wreck drugs, and then they're laced with something and you're just like, what the hell world is this? But you know what? I'm going to change the tone here because there's a very upbeat record in many ways. There's lots where, and for those listening, you know, there's a lot of emotion in it, but I alluded to some of the country sounds and some of the Big Love is really upbeat.
Yeah. It's a crazy song.
Yeah. It was country music. Like when I think of that or the Light Nights, these kinds of songs, I said to my wife, it's festive. Almost, it's like a holiday season treat on some level, some of these songs. Is country music a big thing for you and the band?
Yeah, I mean, I think people, I'm surprised that people are surprised that some of the songs sound like country songs, because I feel like when we started out, I always had a country influence, because when I was a kid, my granny used to listen to loads of country music, you know.
Yeah.
I grew up sort of listening to Johnny Cash and, you know, Skeeter Davis and Nancy Sinatra's country records. And it's just always sort of American country music around.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's, that influence has always been there. You know, song like Tammy Wynette and Patsy Cline and singers like that have always been on in the house when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
So
it's that, the, it's the, that pedal steel. The pedal steel is just a remarkable instrument, and it catches the ear. I mentioned some of the guitar virtuosity I'm hearing, but the pedal steel really shines through, I will say.
I think Yari got, I'm not going to say he got a bit carried away, but he did. You know, we didn't want to make the same record that we'd made before, so of course we were getting away from big string arrangements and all of that. And there's no trumpet on the record either.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Going, right, what have we got here? What can we do? And we got Tim Davidson in to play pedal steel. And I think whilst it was in the studio, Yari just put him to work. that was as simple as that, really.
Well, I think
it was another late night with him going, no, you're not leaving till we get our money's worth.
Well,
I don't know if he got paid, but anyway.
Well, maybe we'll clear the record here and this will be, you know, we'll resolve this issue here. No, I think the festive arrangements and then just, yeah, your knack for hooks and choruses, the chorus for Big Love, Oh Honey, Don't Go Back There, you know, there's no room for you there. I don't even know what I'm saying. I don't know what that means. Like, what is this a reference to? But it gets in my head. So you have this infectious and enigmatic quality that I just want to say I appreciate it. It's really nice.
Well, thank you. It's funny that you, I love it when people say they like Big Love, because that was the one song that all of us weren't convinced. It had a few changes. You know, we did it in a poppy way, and then we changed it and did it in this way. And then we sort of started listening to Waylon Jennings and went off in a sort of Waylon Jennings stroke Fairport Convention vibe, and we were sort of in the studio going, but what is this song? Like, can somebody just explain to me what this is? Are the kids going to like it? Do we sound old?
I mean, I'm old, but I can tell you that
I'm old.
12 and the 9-year-old are into it, and my wife is into
brilliant.
It, age withheld. You know, we're... It's great. I don't think you sound old. It's really beautiful. And it gives the record a nice flow, these different moods and tones.
Thank you very much.
And like I say, for those who haven't heard it yet, you know, songs will just change midstream.
Hi.
There's this duality that I keep using the word, and I seem to be married to it now, but there's something going on with the personality of this record. It knows what it is, but it also is open-minded or something. It wants to explore what it is. Does that make sense?
Well, I think that's great, because I think actually that sort of describes me in a nutshell.
Okay. All right. I feel like I'm onto something here.
You are.
I'm going to quit while I'm ahead.
Okay.
and thank you for this. Thank you for this time, Tracy Ann. But no, is there anything we didn't get to? Is there anything you want to say about this record? Or?
No, I've had a nice chat, and thanks very much for having me.
Oh, of course.
Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. So I want to wrap up by asking about sort of future plans, and also direct people to learn more about you using their telephones and computers and whatnot. Before we get to that, are you writing these? Have you written, rather, since you finished this record, and are there plans afoot for more music?
Well, I have been writing continuously. Like I said earlier, I've been writing loads of songs with Donna. There was quite a lot of leftover songs from the session. Not that we recorded them, with time constraints, we decided just to choose a bunch of songs and go with them rather than record too many and knock a few off. So there are a bunch of songs that, to my mind, are good, strong songs there to be recorded. And Donna and I have been writing some songs. And I think it just depends logistically what the band can manage. You know, I want to get all of the songs out. I don't want to sit in my bedroom going, oh, remember that song I wrote? Oh, it's nice.
I
feel like time's marching on.
Yeah.
So the band are going to try and do as much touring as we can logistically manage. And I'd love to make a new record. I'm ready to do it now, you know.
Okay.
I want to get on with it.
Yeah. So from your vantage point, as long as everyone else is aligned, it would be camera obscura music.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Well, we can look forward to that, and I hope it comes to fruition. It sounds like... Oh, and the touring is extensive. Is that correct?
Well, we're doing a couple of weeks in the UK, and then we're doing, I think, 4 weeks, maybe a little bit more in North America. We're going to Mexico.
Oh, nice.
We're doing a couple of bits and bobs. I guess we're just about back in the shop window, and it really just depends what people can manage,
yeah.
You know, with their other jobs and family life.
Are you looking forward to touring, or do you got the dread?
Very much.
Okay.
I am. Okay. I can't wait to go on tour again.
Okay.
Difficult to leave the kids.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the tricky part.
I assume maybe they're in school. Like, have you contemplated bringing them along when they're out of school?
Oh, no. I don't think we could afford to do that, to be honest. Plus, that would be an absolute nightmare. I've done that before when he was a baby, but... Yeah. No, they're all in school.
Right. Sorry, you're referring to the band kids, not just your...
Yeah, they're all in school.
Yeah,
The kids are in school.
None of my business. Just curious. Just seeing, I've talked to some bands who have brought their kids, the bandmates or whatever have brought their kids along, and just to give them a taste of what it's like. And it's harder. Harder and longer, it seems.
Yeah.
A lot more stopping, but I think they wanted to just give their kids a chance to... experience it. So all this to say, that's great. So if people want to learn more about Camera Obscura on the internet, where would you direct them, Tracy Ann?
Oh dear. I should have these things in front of me so I can tell you.
Website, social
media. Yeah,
we've
got a website, camera/obscura.net, I think is our website. We've got Facebook page, we've got Instagram.
Okay.
I believe we've got TikTok now. I'm very old, but I think we do.
Are you partaking of the TikTok? Do you manage any of your social media?
Oh, we manage all of it. We've always done that. So we do manage all of it. So if people send us messages, it's actually us that will reply.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, we've always done that. And I think we're still on Twitter as well. So.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll link to all these things in
Thank
the show
you.
Notes so people can just click on them and not rely on us fumbling about to remember things, domain names and whatnot. There's a song that we can go out on as we're speaking, Tracy Ann. The record's not out for a little bit, but as people are hearing this, the record's out shortly, if I may put it to you that way. So is there a song from Look to the East, Look to the West that we can go out on? And if so, what would you pick and why?
I'll go for We're Gonna Make It in a Man's World. I think that's a poppy song. And we talked about it a lot today. So let's go for that.
Okay. This is one of our favorite songs of the year in my household. It's called We're Gonna Make It in a Man's World. It's from Look to the East, Look to the West by Camera Obscura. Tracy, this was a pleasure and an honor for me to get to spend some time with you. So I just want to say thank you for this. And I wish you the best luck in the future. I hope we talk again.
You too. Thanks for saying nice things about the record. I'm glad that you like it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Truth, how come I don't get away with being as rude as you? We're gonna make it in a man's world. We're gonna make it in a man's world. We're gonna make it in a man's world. Make it in a man's world.
There you go. Brand new music by Camera Obscura from their new album, Look to the East, Look to the West. Special thanks again to Tracy Ann Campbell. We've never encountered each other before, never met, never spoken. So that was a new experience, a new encounter for me, and I rather enjoyed it. And she's very lovely, and I hope you found that that chat engaging. In this case, Tracy Ann is appearing on the 861st episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode you're looking for and you want to learn more about me, please visit vishkhanna.com. Also, check on the hyperlinked text that says follow Vish online to find me on the social media platforms that may or may not still exist. And also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep me and this podcast going. There are different payment tiers, so don't fret if you can't afford, you know, some of the higher tiers. Any amount is welcome, but there are benefits that might be compelling to you in each tier, and I'll let you explore those for yourself. But that is the primary source of income. This is my primary job these days. I'm enjoying the work, but it is financially a little scary, and right now it's not completely sustainable, but I'd like it to be. So if you've long listened to the show, or you're new to the show and you enjoyed this conversation or whatever, you know, check out the Patreon, and if you can, please support the show. It means a lot. So again, click on the link there that says support Vish on Patreon. It's patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you so much. Also want to thank Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music. They have bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, and they also have a great website. You can learn about them, and you can order records right from this website of theirs. It's blackbird.ca. That is also hyperlinked in the show notes. Also want to thank independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Hey, if you're listening to this episode, you probably like beautiful, majestic pop music. You know who makes that? Jim Guthrie, and he loans me music for this show as well. You can learn more about my good and dear friend there, Jim Guthrie, at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Tracy Ann from Camera Obscura. I hope you enjoyed it, like I said earlier. And if you've never heard of my show before, I hope you'll consider subscribing to this podcast or following it and telling your friends about it, maybe. Leaving nice ratings and reviews on your pod platform actually does help with the visibility of this show. So if you have a moment to do that, that would be great. Otherwise, I hope you are doing well and that you'll join me again on my next episode, or you know, go see Camera Obscura if they're in your town. And otherwise, I hope you're well. Talk to you soon. Thanks again for listening. Bye for now.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.